good morning. Long before pets had their own department stores, there was radio. My name is Arthur, and this is the Grand Hour. And this morning, on the 20th of October, 2021, I will play a couple of radio dramas. The first one being Bob Bailey, starring as yours truly, Johnny Dollar. This one is titled The Ellen Deer Matter, with an original air date of the 6th of January, 1957. You're tuned in to 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org, Medford Tufts Freeform Radio. Thanks.
Hollywood, it's time now for...
Johnny Dollar.
Universal Adjustment.
Oh, hi, Pat. What's on your mind?
The sleek, lovely, beautiful Ellen Deer.
On the strength of that description, I'll take her.
And she's loaded. $325,000 worth of jewelry.
Hey, that girl needs a bodyguard. Sleek.
Yeah, Johnny. Needs a guard of some kind. Only she isn't a girl. She's a boat.
I've just lost my enthusiasm. What's the matter with the old tub?
That's what I want you to find out, Johnny.
That last crack suddenly got me interested again. Okay, Pat, I'll be right over.
Bob Bailey in the exciting adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account. America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the Western Maritime and Property Insurance Company, Los Angeles, California. Following is an account of expenses incurred during my investigation of the Ellen Deer matter. Expense account item 190 cents, taxi from my apartment to the offices of Universal Adjustment Bureau in Hartford. Pat McCracken's usual smile was noticeably missing when I walked in on him.
Come in, Johnny, and sit down.
Thanks.
Oh, and you're to bill Western Maritime and Property on this one instead of us.
Okay, but how are you involved?
We handle all their claims that are of any size. Story, you ever hear of Randolph Berman?
I know of a jeweler down in New York.
That's the one. And if you know him, Johnny, you've been putting too much gravy in your expense account.
I said no of him.
Hmm.
Didn't he bring in the Star of Cape Town and the Kamandu Emerald?
That's right. Everybody seems to think he's a crook, and yet somehow he manages to handle some of the finest jewels in the world.
How can an honest man afford it?
Yeah. This time it's the Bettenhaus collection. It's out of Hungary.
Oh, yeah, I read about that. Only I thought somebody down in Mexico owned it.
Yeah, a fellow named Rigo Mariani, down in Guadalajara. He's the one who sold it to Randolph Berman.
Okay, now. Is this Ellen Deer you mentioned Berman's wife?
No. Former wife. He's in about his fifth. All beautiful, dumb dolls. But more important, it's the name of his 72-foot motor cruiser. Mm-hmm. And the Bermans have been traveling around in it, down the coast, through the canal, along the coast of Central America, and so on. Anyhow, when he got word that the Bettenhaus collection could be had, he wasted no time in getting to Guadalajara.
And that's where Western Maritime and Property comes in.
Right. They had already written a policy on the boat for $52,000. Their main office in Los Angeles was close at hand, so he had them write the policy on the jewels.
Is that where Berman is now, in Los Angeles?
Oh, no. He's still in Mexico. Didn't want to move with those priceless rocks until he was certain of the insurance. And before Western would write it, of course, they wanted the collection appraised.
Naturally. But who in Mexico?
Jacques Jean-Pierre, the famous gemologist, was right there in Guadalajara, you know, to look over the collection himself. Ah. So he made the appraisal. The policy has been issued. $325,000.
I still don't see anything wrong with the whole deal, Pat.
Well, there isn't anything wrong with it yet. But in spite of Berman's standing in the profession, his reputation, it isn't everything it might be.
Yeah, come to think of it, wasn't there a killing or two involved in this acquisition of the Star of Cape Town?
There have been several things like that. He's been involved in attempts to smuggle in some valuable pieces. He always managed somehow to come out smelling like a rose. Legally, perfectly clean, you understand?
But you still don't trust him?
Oh, no. And with his planning to carry that load of stuff around in his yacht...
Yeah, see what you mean. If anything happened to those rocks or the boat, over $300,000 right out the window.
Exactly. Now, belatedly, Western is worried about it. And they'll pay good money to have you assuage their worries. You have a Mexican tourist card?
Sure, from my last fishing trip down there.
And I think you better go down and guard that collection until Berman gets it safely up into the States. He's considered quite the host. He'll probably be perfectly willing to have you aboard.
Now, this is the kind of assignment I like, yachting in the blue Pacific. But surely he hasn't got his boat parked in Guadalajara. That's over 100 miles inland.
No, it's at Mazatlan. And from what I've been able to learn, it's surrounded by armed guards day and night while he has some engine work done.
But as soon as that's finished, he'll head north to the States.
So he says. Got a branch office in Los Angeles. He'll probably deliver the collection there. I just want to be sure he gets there, Johnny.
Hmm? Okay, Pat. You can wire the boys at Weston that I'm on my way. Item 2, 19140, plane fare and incidentals, Hartford to Mazatlan via Los Angeles. The first leg of the flight to L.A. was uneventful. Except for a good-looking young blonde from Santa Barbara, whom I promised to look up as soon as this case is... Well, that's not for the expense account. When we arrived at the Los Angeles International Airport, I learned that I'd have a three-quarter-hour wait for my plane to Mazatlan. So I grabbed a magazine, that's item 3, 35 cents, when I heard my name being called on the PA system.
Dollar, report to Pan American Airways desk.
With the thought in mind that perhaps my little friend from the plane might have decided to stay over in L.A. Her name was Rita, by the way. I lost no time in getting over to the Pan Am desk.
Mr. Dollar?
Yeah?
Johnny Dollar?
That's right.
I'm Arthur Arthur, Western Maritime and Property Insurance Company.
Oh, yeah. How do, Mr. Arthur? Planning to go on down to Mazatlan with me?
No. Meet Monsieur Jacques Jean-Pierre.
Monsieur Dollar, I am honored.
How are you, Mr. Jean-Pierre?
This is the gentleman who appraised the Bettenhouse collection for us.
Oh, yes, yes. I am an expert.
So that we could issue the policy on it to Mr. Berman.
Oh, yes.
Yes, he's done this sort of thing for us many times.
Oh, I do not
now,
have
I'm
any...
afraid that he's brought us rather bad news.
Something's already happened to the collection?
Well, not exactly. Not for the whole collection.
No,
I mean.
Please.
That is, I'm not quite sure. What I mean is...
Yeah, just what do you mean, Mr. Arthur?
Perhaps I should explain to Monsieur Dollar, eh?
Well, I think somebody better.
Yes, you go ahead, Jean. Yeah,
very well.
And while you're doing it, I'll cancel the rest of Mr. Dollar's reservation to Mazatlan. Yes, I'll do that. Oh, Claire...
Oh, no, wait a minute. First, let me find out what this is all about.
Oui.
Very well. Jacques here was in Guadalajara when the Bettenhouse collection became available for purchase.
Uh-huh. Yes, Monsieur Dollar. I had gone there in the hope that some of the pieces might be purchased separately.
So?
Alas, such was not the case. The Mariani firm decided to dispose of the collection only as a whole.
I see. Well, what's this bad news you have?
Ah, I am getting to
yes,
that.
Yes, you see, it's this
no,
way.
Please.
Well, then go ahead, John.
Thank you. Monsieur Dollar, interested as I was, I looked over the collection very carefully, each individual piece.
Oh, yeah?
And you must believe me, to an expert like myself, every facet of every gem has a character all its own. A precious stone is like a face to me, always to be remembered.
Yeah. Well, go on, please.
I simply wish to make it clear to you, monsieur, that every item in the Bettenhouse collection is completely familiar to me.
Oh, it is?
As are many other important gems throughout the world. You know, each is like a friend.
And each stone in him is like a face to
Ah,
you.
Precisely. Always to be remembered.
Yes.
Alors,
well,
The collection is purchased by Monsieur Randolph Berman.
Yes, Mr. Berman.
Please. He wishes to insure it in Monsieur Arthur's company.
Yeah, I know all that.
Well, Monsieur Arthur requests by telephone that I appraise it.
$325,000.
Ah, then you know.
I know.
So I stay at Guadalajara a few days to wait Monsieur Arthur's check for my services.
Yes. You want to be sure the check
please. I visit some of my old friends among the jewel setters. And then, on the third day, what do you think happens?
You tell me.
Johnny, this is it. In the shop.
No, please, yeah. Monsieur Arthur.
I'm sorry.
In the shop of my friend Garcia. Hernandez, I watch him work on the mound for a beautiful diamond. And suddenly, I see that the stone is an old friend.
One from the Bettenhouse collection?
Ah, oui. The Kalibak diamond that was supposedly in the possession of Monsieur Berman.
You're sure of the identity of that stone, Mr. Jean-Pierre?
Oh, please. As I told you, monsieur, a precious stone to me...
Yeah, it's like a face to you. So what you figure, Arthur, is that you've insured a boatload of $300,000 worth of gems on the way to the USA, and maybe they're not on board.
Exactly. Unless, of course...
Mr. Jean-Pierre, Did you tell Mr. Berman about this one stone?
Oh, I went immediately to Mazatlan, where I knew he had his boat, the LND.
Well, what did he say?
Alas, he had sailed away.
Did you learn his destination?
Oh, yes.
Los Angeles, Johnny, right here. He has a branch office.
Well, has he had time to get here yet?
I don't think so.
Have you tried radioing to his yacht?
No, no, I've done nothing. You see, I didn't learn about this until Mr. Jean-Pierre arrived just a few hours ago.
Yes, I came up on the aeroplane, the better to arrive and speak with Monsieur Arthur before Monsieur Berman would arrive.
Do you know where Berman plans to dock his boat?
Well,
Probably the port in San Pedro, if he's coming here. But who can be sure? Usually on vacation trips, he docks down the coast at Balboa, the yacht club. Or, who knows, he might even...
Yeah. He might have no intention of coming up to the States at all. He might not even have the jewels with him. Arthur, do you know where his branch office is?
Oh, yes. It's in Los Angeles. Well, actually, it's in Beverly Hills.
Got a car?
Yeah.
Then let's go. Though he couldn't quite put his finger on it, Arthur was convinced that Randolph Berman was up to something and that his insurance company was going to have to take the rap. On the way into Berman's Beverly Hills office, we dropped Jean-Pierre at the Beverly Hilton and told him to sit tight in case we needed him again. Berman's office was in a nice modern building on South Beverly Drive, tastefully furnished with pictures of various famous jewels on the walls, but with nothing of particular value in evidence. However, I did notice that one wall held a built-in vault big enough for a reasonably sized bank. We were approached by a hand-rubbing, obsequious little character dressed in striped pants and cutaway coat and wearing thick glasses.
Good morning, gentlemen. Is there any way I may be of service to you?
Yeah, I think there is. Are you the...
Oh, Mr. Arthur, forgive me. I didn't recognize you for a moment.
Mr. Carello, this is Mr. Johnny Dollar.
Hi.
How do you do? Is there something I may show you, Mr. Dollar? Some little bauble, perhaps, for a charming lady?
Well, not at the moment, Mr. Carello.
Oh. Oh, Mr. Arthur, there's no reason to mail this to you. Let me see now. Oh, yes, here it is. Here is a request for slight revision of the policy on the Bettenhaus collection.
Oh?
What's this?
The wire was sent by Mr. Berman just before he embarked for Mazatlan. I was going to put it into letter form to be more
what
proper,
it say?
But...
Well, now here, I'll read this. Please request Arthur revise Bettenhaus policy. Exclude Calabar diamonds. Value 4,000, which I have sold private party in Guadalajara. Oh, well, we kind of guessed wrong, didn't we, Johnny?
Mr. Carello.
Yes.
Has Mr. Berman wired you whether he's coming here?
Oh, of course he is, with that collection.
When? When is he going to arrive?
Well, his lovely yacht, the El India, should reach San Pedro Harbor late tonight. But that's what he wired me, and I intend to meet him there.
Then I'm sure you won't mind if I go with you.
Oh?
Mr. Dollar is a special investigator.
Investigator?
Well, actually, I'm here just to help Mr. Berman protect that collection.
Oh, excellent. Then you can arrange for the police escort. Yes, and alert the harbor police to guard the El India, as Mr. Berman requested.
Did he request that?
Oh, indeed.
But apparently he hasn't been worried about anything happening to the collection while he's at sea.
At sea? Oh, surely you don't mean pirates or anything like that in this modern day and age.
You know something? At this point, I'm not quite sure what I mean, or even why I'm here.
Well, of course.
Well, of course what, Arthur?
Oh, excuse me while I answer that.
Well, I mean...
Berman jewels.
That is...
What?
Well, at least I'll feel better when the stuff is here in the vault.
Wait a minute.
Oh, no.
Carello at the phone paled visibly, then gasped and clutched the back of a chair for support as he listened on the phone. His jaw dropped, his eyes widened, and he shook his head once or twice in horrified disbelief. Finally, slowly, he hung up and came unsteadily toward us.
Mr. Carello.
Yeah, what is it, Mr. Carello?
The Coast Guard.
Yes?
They said the Ellendale, the yacht.
Yes?
Sunk.
What?
In 600 feet of water. In the outer channel.
Act two of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, in just a moment. Democracy. What has it to do with money, the medium of exchange of mankind? A couple of thousand years ago, it was said that money alone sets the world in motion. That's one way of saying that money and economy are virtually one and the same thing. The economy of a nation depends on its commerce. Commerce depends on manufacturing and services.
it has been proven that those nations which practice democracy have the greatest economics. That means money, more money for more people, and a greater freedom of opportunity to earn a higher standard of living. That's why democracy provides mankind with its richest legacy of freedom.
Now, Act Two of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar and the Ellen Dear Matter.
Expense account item four, $7 even for a fast taxi ride to Coast Guard headquarters in San Pedro, which is really the port of Los Angeles. By dint of elbowing my way in, I got directly to Captain Barney Thorson.
I'm afraid you got only half the story, Mr. Dollar.
All I know, Captain, is that the Ellen Dear went down in some 600 feet of water in the outer channel. Total loss.
That's correct. However, what you don't know is that the passengers, Mr. and Mrs. Berman, and the crew were picked up and brought in here.
Oh?
Outside of a little soaking and a little scare, they were perfectly all right. You see, the Ellen Dear had apparently had some engine trouble before she left Mazatlan.
Yes, so I understand.
Mexican authorities, with whom we fully cooperate, notified us we'd better keep an eye out for her. So when she reached the channel, we weren't surprised to get a radio call from her asking us to stand by that Universal joint was kicking up.
Is that what happened?
By the time one of our cutters got within hailing distance, she was on the way down. That propeller shaft had whipped loose, torn through the hull, and the Ellen Dear was sinking fast. Ask me, that boat was overpowered, Dolly.
How do you mean?
Well, it must have been, because sheer torque tore the whole engine loose from its mountings. And it plowed through the bottom along with everything else on board that was heavy. It was a big safe, for instance, anchored amidships.
There was a what?
A safe. A safe, you know, a small, heavy steel vault.
Yeah, I know. That went down, too?
Yeah, with the engine. It was all our boys could do to keep the owner from diving over after it. It was crying like a baby. You'd think he'd had the crown jewels in it.
Maybe you're not too wrong at that.
What?
Not the crown jewels, perhaps, but a collection worth something over 300 grand. Now, what about salvage?
Salvage operations in 600 feet of water in that channel?
Oh, yeah.
No, no, Dolly. Salvage, even if it were possible, would cost a couple of times worth of that stuff, at least.
The only passengers were the Bermans, huh?
That's right. Crew three.
And they weren't able to save anything?
Nothing. Not of any consequence, that is. One of the crew didn't even have his shoes and shirt on.
What about Berman and his wife?
It's funny what people will do in an emergency sometimes.
What do you mean?
Well, you've heard about the man whose house catches fire. He gets panicky, throws all the china and the glassware out the window, and carries out the mattress.
What are you getting at, Captain?
The only thing that Berman saved in his excitement was two beat-up old hats and a fishing rod.
Oh, yeah, I see what you mean.
And all his wife brought along was a handful of nylon stockings. She was hanging on to them for dear life. Oh, yeah, a big hat box with an evening dress half hanging out of it.
And that's all?
That's all. Hey, you know, that Mrs. Berman's quite a dish. Not too bright, but a real looker.
Where are they now, Captain?
They're headed for Beverly Hills. Beverly Wilshire was the hotel, I think. In any event, Dollar, I'm afraid your company is going to have a big, fat claim to pay.
On the yacht, yes.
What's that mean?
What do you think? Item 5, 320, long-distance call to the police in Mazatlan. I wanted to be sure that the Bettenhaus collection had been on board the Ellen Dear when she left port down there. Inspector Romulo assured me it had, that he'd checked the safe on the boat himself before allowing it to sail. Furthermore, he had insisted his own maritime service keep tabs on it up to the point where it made contact with the U.S. Coast Guard. In other words, the loot couldn't very well have been passed to someone else at sea. Item 6, 580, cab fare to Beverly Hills, where I dropped in at Berman's office.
No, Mr. Dollar, he and Mrs. Berman are at the Beverly Wilshire. I'm sure you understand it's been necessary for them to buy a lot of clothes and things.
Yeah, but he will come here.
Oh, yes, indeed. From his last phone call, I'd say he'll be here within the hour.
All right, then I'll come back. Please ask him to stick around and wait for me if he doesn't mind.
Of course, Mr. Dollar, I shall be glad to. Oh, incidentally, he has had me phone Mr. Arthur and ask that claim forms for both the Bettenhaus collection and the loss of the cruiser be brought here to the office just as quickly as possible.
Yeah, I'd figured as much. Berman wasn't wasting any time. Oh, I know there still wasn't any concrete evidence that Berman was trying to pull a fast one. Ostensibly, the only reason for my trip out here was to watch over that fabulous jewel collection. A lot of good I'd been. He'd lost the collection and his boat, and the company'd have to pay. Then a wild idea hit me. I suddenly remembered something that had happened months ago. Last July, to be exact, when a big passenger liner, the Andrea Doria, had sunk off the Atlantic coast. According to the papers, when the survivors were brought into the port, the usual customs inspection was waived. And it occurred to me at the time that every one of those people could have easily smuggled in anything he could carry or conceal in his clothing. I'm not saying it did happen. I'm sure it didn't. But it could have. And if such an idea occurred to me, why not to a man like Berman, who was already pretty well known for his tricks to evade customs? Item 6, 20 cents, phone call to the Coast Guard and Captain Thorson.
Thorson speaking.
Johnny Dollar, Captain, answer me just one question, will you?
Sure, what?
When you brought them in, were the Bermans required to pass through customs?
Well, no, of course not. There'd hardly be any reason to...
Thank you very much. Item 7, 10 cents, another call. This time to Arthur Arthur at Western Maritime and Property Insurance.
You caught me in the nick of time, Johnny. I was just walking out the door.
On your way to Berman's office?
Why, yes.
With a handful of claims forms?
Yes.
Now listen, get there as fast as you can. Get there ahead of him.
What?
So that you can see if he brings anything into the office, like the Bettenhaus collection.
What?
Though I doubt if he'd be that foolish.
Foolish or not, how could he, Johnny? That collection, unfortunately, is at the bottom of the ocean.
Listen to me. Keep him there. Maybe on the pretext of having to wait for me. Any reason you can think of.
I'm afraid I don't understand.
Just hold him until I get there, understand?
Very well, Johnny. But what are you going to do?
Arthur, I may have to break in and rob a hotel room. I went out and stationed myself across the street from the Beverly Wilshire. 5 minutes later, I saw Randolph Berman walk out the front door and head east on Wilshire Boulevard in the direction of his office on Beverly Drive. I waited a few minutes to make sure he didn't turn back, then entered the hotel. At the desk, I learned the number of Berman's suite on the ninth floor. Break in? It would have taken a battering ram. So I tried knocking.
All right. You don't have to bust down the door. What's the matter? You forget your key and... No. Get out of here, buddy. Randy said not to let anybody in. He's out buying us clothes.
Oh, he'd tell you to let me in, baby.
Hey, who are you?
Hernandez sent me up here from Guadalajara.
Oh, then come in. Oh, you are in.
Yeah.
Well, have a drink then.
No, thanks.
A girl's entitled to a couple of drinks after that dousing in the ocean, and you might as well... What about Hernandez?
Your husband sold him the wrong stone from that collection.
Sold? Oh, he gave it to him.
Oh, then you know about it.
Oh, sure. So he could make a legit-looking change in the insurance and convince everybody he was on the up and... You sure you're from Hernandez?
You kidding? How else would I know about the whole deal?
I don't know. Hey, Randy said not to let anybody in here or he'd kill me. Dumb blonde, he called me.
You? A smart, beautiful girl like you?
Oh, hey, you're okay. My name's Vi. Come on, let's have a drink.
No, thanks. Listen, Vi. I've got to get the right stone from that collection, the caliber diamond. Then I'll leave this one I've got in my pocket here.
Which one you got? Let me see it.
Oh, no. Only Mr. Berman. And only when he gives me the caliber.
Well, which one you got there, huh?
Well, never mind. I'll show it to Mr. Berman.
I just want to see it.
Not until I get the caliber from the collection. So, if he isn't here, if he's taking it to the office, I'll just...
You think he's crazy? Let everybody know he... Let me see the one you have, huh?
Look, I just told you. Anyway, how do I know I can trust you? I didn't even see you in Guadalajara.
Oh, now you sound like Randy. Dumb blonde, he said. Keep the door locked. But I let the bellboy in with the drinks, and I let you in, didn't I? Well, let me see the one you got. Will you, if I get you the other one?
From the hat box that didn't have to go through customs?
How did you know? Hey, you're a cutie. I'll bet you read about the Andrew Dorsey, just like Randy did. Come on, now let's take a
look. Where is the hat box, boy?
Now, wait a minute. Maybe I am dumb. Who did you say you are?
Where's the hat box?
No, I won't tell you. You get out of here.
Now, without the collection, Vi.
No, you can't. He... Randy would kill me. He'd kill me if he even knew I let you in here. Who are you?
Johnny Dollar, insurance investigator.
Oh, please, Johnny, get out of here.
The stuff in the bedroom?
You can't go in there. I mean it. He'd kill me.
Sorry, but that's your worry.
Oh, no. Stop it or I'll set your eyes out.
Hey,
no, you
pull in those claws, baby.
No, you...
Well, I hate to do this, but...
No, no, help! Help!
Oh, yeah, that's right, that's right. Get the manager up here. Get the police up here.
Police? No.
Oh, yes. Then you'd really be in trouble. You'd be better off if Berman tried to kill you. Now, where's the stuff?
It's in the closet, on the floor, in the hat box.
Thanks. Well, well. Just a handful, but worth a fortune. Well. Oh, now, wait a minute, girl. Put down that bottle.
I gotta stop you. He'd kill me, don't you understand? Just for letting you in here. You don't know him.
Look, baby, you're in this thing deep enough as it is. Don't try to make it any worse for yourself.
But when he finds out that I...
Listen. He's come back.
And I open up. Get my hands full.
What'll I do? Where'll I go?
Right here, behind this closet door. Quick.
Ah!
Johnny,
just stay there. Hang on to that bottle and think over what I told you about getting in deep.
Hi, where'd you get these drinks? You let somebody in here. Bellboy? Why, you half-witted bird brain. I told you.
Who are you?
The name is Dollar, Mr. Berman.
Insurance Dick?
I just dropped by to pick up the Bettenhaus collection.
Put it down, Dollar. I'm a good shot with this thing.
Yeah. And it wouldn't be the first time you killed over a handful of jewelry, would it?
That's right. Won't be the last. But you'll never know about it. Now, where's Vi?
How should I know?
She let you in here? I murdered that dizzy blonde.
That dizzy blonde is a lot smarter than you think.
Where is she? What do you mean?
By helping me, she has a chance of getting out of this mess you've involved her in. Of getting out clean.
That dirty two-timing... Dollar, I'm going to kill you.
You'd even like to involve her in that, too, wouldn't you?
Thanks for the idea. I'll make it look like she killed
him. Oh, no, you...
Nice work with that bottle, Vi. Well, he missed you.
Please, you won't let him...
No, no, don't worry, baby. He won't bother anybody. Not for a long, long time. Item 8, $245 even. Incidentals during a couple of days of relaxation under the California sun and transportation back to Hartford. Expense account total, $453.95. Remarks? By way of getting off as easily as possible, Vi sang like a canary. And incidentally, cleared up a couple of other of his shady deals. Result? By the time his prison term runs out, he'll be too long dead to collect the insurance on his yacht. End of remarks, end of report. Yours truly... Johnny Dollar.
Now, here is our star to tell you about next week's story.
Next week, the DeSalle matter. And I promise you a double-barrel thrill in it. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, originates in Hollywood. It is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone, who also wrote tonight's story. Heard in our cast were Virginia Gregg, Lawrence Dobkin, Howard McNear, Jay Novello, Jack Edwards, Barney Phillips, and Raymond Burr. Musical supervision is by Amerigo Marino. Be sure to join us next week, same time and station, for another exciting story of yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Dan Coverley speaking.
Yep, sorry about that. I'm trying to figure the board out again. That was yours truly, Johnny Dollar, the Ellen Deer matter. I didn't realize Jack Johnstone wrote that. That was heard on the Armed Forces Radio Network on the 6th of January, 1957. My name is Arthur, and this is the Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org, Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio. Go ahead and have a FCC obligation before I introduce the next show.
This is a firearm safety PSA. No matter how you feel about current gun laws, everybody should know the most critical rules about handling any firearm. Rule 0, all guns are always loaded. Rule 1, never point a gun at anything you are not willing to destroy. Rule 2, keep your finger off the trigger until your sights are on target and you have made the decision to shoot. Rule 3, be sure of your target and what is beyond it. A public safety message from WMFO in Medford, Tufts Educational Radio.
Gun safety. WMFO, Medford.
Thank you, Digital George and Digital Henry, for that public service announcement. Next, I believe, let me try and cue this up. Yep, next we're gonna hear Gunsmoke. This one's titled The Executioner. It's an original air date of the 15th of April, 1956.
Gunsmoke, brought to you by Chesterfield. Chesterfield packs more pleasure because it's more perfectly packed, thanks to Accuray. They satisfy the most. Around Dodge City and in the territory on West, there's just one way to handle the killers and the spoilers, and that's with a U.S. Marshal and the smell of gun smoke. Gunsmoke, starring William Conrad. The transcribed story of the violence that moved west with young America. And the story of a man who moved with it.
I'm that man, Matt Dillon, United States Marshal. The first man they look for and the last they want to meet. It's a chancy job, and it makes a man watchful and a little lonely.
This fellow riding in, Morgan?
He's a stranger for sure, Abe.
That brand on his horse, I can't even read it.
Good horse, though.
Yeah.
Get down, stranger.
Who are you, men?
Well, we're the Curry brothers. We own this ranch.
How far is it to Dodge?
60 miles, if you ride in a straight line.
I want some grain for my horse. Where is it?
Look, stranger, we got no grain. We're fresh out.
Now, Abe, if he wants a little grain...
Then he can act more polite about it.
Oh, ain't I been polite enough for you? Maybe I ought to change my ways just for you.
What are you, anyway? Some kid who thinks he's a man just because he's wearing a gun for the first time?
Mister, I've been wearing a gun 8 years. Ever since I was 16.
That makes you 24 and still a kid that ought to be taken out to the shed.
You aim to take me out, mister?
Somebody ought to.
A lot of men have tried. I guess it's your turn now. Go ahead, you're wearing a gun.
Oh, now, we won't have any fighting. You watch your temper, Abe. The kid don't mean nothing.
The name's Tom Clegg. I ain't a kid.
All right, Clegg. Forget it. You too, Abe.
Well...
Say you're sorry, mister.
Say what?
You heard me.
Are you crazy?
Maybe this will help you. Now draw.
No, Abe.
Abe, don't move, mister.
You killed him. You killed my brother. Well, he hardly got his hand on his gun.
Why don't you try me?
Abe wasn't no gunfighter. Neither am I.
Then I tell you what. You practice a little. I'll be in Dodge for a spell. Come see me.
Say, there is a good-looking horse, Mr. Dillon.
Oh, which one, Chester?
That big bay that young fella's just getting off of there.
Oh?
Well, ain't
he? Well, I wasn't looking at the horse, Chester.
Oh, you know that fella?
Yeah, maybe.
What are you people staring at?
Aren't you Tom Clegg?
What? Matt Dillon.
At Las Cruces about 8 years ago, wasn't it?
Exactly 8 years ago. I've changed some since then, Marshal Dillon.
Yeah, I'm a marshal. This Chester Proudfoot, Clegg.
How do you do?
Hello. Well, Marshal, I suppose you're remembering how I didn't dare draw on that fellow in Las Cruces.
You were smart not to. He'd have killed you, sure.
I left there. I went out by myself. I practiced for 2 years, every day. I got pretty good with a gun, Marshal.
Did you?
That fellow's dead now. I went back and I killed him.
It wasn't much of a quarrel, Clegg.
I don't need much, Marshal. Oh, I've killed a lot of men since then. But don't you worry about me. They always draw first.
Are you telling me you've turned gunman, huh?
I've got me a pretty fair reputation in New Mexico.
And now you want to be known in Kansas. That's why you came here.
I didn't say that.
I know you're kind, Clegg. I ought to. I've killed enough of them.
Not me, Marshal. You ain't going to kill me. I'm too fast for you and I'm too smart. I'll show you someday.
That whistling man, Bobby Haggart, really started something. Tonight, the Calypso Boys join in. Ready, amigos?
Packs more pleasure. Packs more pleasure. Chesterfield packs more pleasure. Because Chesterfield's more perfectly packed.
It stands to reason a cigarette made better and packed better smokes better, tastes better. And Chesterfield is more perfectly packed by Accuray. This electronic miracle removes human error in cigarette manufacture. So Accuray Chesterfield is firm and pleasing to the lips, mild yet deeply satisfying. Yes, Chesterfield gives you something no other cigarette can give you.
Chesterfield packs more pleasure because Chesterfield's more perfectly packed.
To the touch, to the taste. Chesterfield packs more pleasure because it's more perfectly packed. By Chesterfield, mild, yet they satisfy the most.
Chester.
Yes, sir, I'm coming, Mr. Dillon. What was it you wanted?
You all through out there?
Well, I'm through to one. I was trying to open that back door again. I guess it won't never get fixed properly unless you just build us a new. Well, Morgan Curry.
All right, come on in, Morgan.
Oh, Chester.
Where's Abe at?
Some
About Abe, I come to see the marshal.
Something wrong, Morgan?
Marshal, you've known me and Abe a long time.
I sure have.
Would you say I'm a man who tells lies?
You know the answer to that, Morgan.
And I'll say it short. A fella rode up to the ranch day before yesterday, and him and Abe got into a little argument, but Abe was about willing to call it off when this fella slapped him.
And Abe went for his gun, huh?
He never had a chance, Marshal. This fella was the fastest man I ever seen.
Did he say his name, Morgan?
Tom Clegg.
Yeah, I thought so.
He's a killer, Marshal. He made Abe draw.
That's what he means about being smart.
No man can take being slapped. That ain't self-defense, Marshal, and he can't claim it is.
The law says he can, Morgan.
Look, Marshal, I ain't a coward. You know that, but there's no use my facing him. He'd kill me easy as he did Abe. Now, what good would that do?
I wish I could help you, Morgan.
Well, it ain't just me, Marshal. It's all the men he's going to kill before he's through. Somebody's got to stop him.
Somebody will. Someday.
Now, before he kills any more men. It's like poisoning a wolf. Don't you see that?
Morgan, I'm a lawman. When Tom Clegg breaks the law, I'll go after him. But until he does, there's nothing I can do.
I don't know if you're fast enough for him, Marshal. But you're the only man I do know who might be.
I'm not hired to gun men down, Morgan.
He's got to be killed.
And I'll admit the world would be better off without him.
You said something about his being smart.
Now, he claimed that.
And we'll see how smart he is. Marshal, Tom Clegg's going to die, no matter what. He's going to die.
Now, one's my limit, Kitty.
One? Oh, you're expecting trouble.
I didn't say that.
One beer said it.
You know me too well, Kitty. But you're right about my expecting trouble.
Well, I already knew about that. I've watched Morgan Curry following Clegg in and out of here for 2 days now.
I don't know what Morgan has in mind, Kitty, but I'm sure he doesn't plan to shoot Clegg in the back or anything like that.
Well, he isn't even carrying a gun.
Yeah, I know.
He just stands around at a distance and sort of keeps an eye on Clegg. It's driving him crazy.
But Morgan's not carrying a gun has made Clegg helpless to do anything about it.
Maybe he's trying to get him into a fist fight, Matt.
Clegg wouldn't fight him, Kitty. He knows he'd get torn apart.
Beats me what he's up to.
Well, I wish Morgan would go home and forget about it.
Maybe it's you he's trying to shame, Matt.
Me? What for?
For not doing anything about Clegg murdering his brother.
It wasn't murder, Kitty. Abe drew first.
The way I heard it, Clegg made him draw. And I don't care what the law calls self-defense.
Well, I have to, Kitty. I have to care.
Yeah, I know, Matt. Well, there they are.
What?
Clegg. He just went to the bar. Morgan will be along directly.
Yeah. Well, you keep an eye on him, Kitty.
Me, keep an eye on him.
I gotta ride out into the country tomorrow. I'm leaving before dawn so as I can get back early in the afternoon.
Well, then you better get to bed. Good night, Matt.
I'll see you tomorrow, Kitty.
Sure.
Marshal! I want to talk to you.
I'll go ahead, Clegg. Talk.
It's about him.
Huh? Oh, Morgan. Hey, Morgan.
What are you calling him for?
You want me, Marshal?
Yeah. Clegg here wanted to talk to me about you, Morgan. I thought maybe you ought to hear it, too.
Sure, he can hear it. I want him to stop following me around, that's all.
Oh, why tell me that, Clegg?
Because you've got to stop him.
Me stop him? He isn't breaking any law.
He ain't wearing a gun. A dirty coward.
There's no law that a man has to wear a gun.
It's making me jumpy. I don't like being stared at all the time.
You got a guilty conscience about something, Clay?
You shut up.
Why don't you take your gun off and shut me up, Clay?
You hear him, Marshal? You see what a coward he is?
I can't help you, Clay.
Lock him up, Marshal. Go on, lock him up. You heard me.
Yeah, I heard you.
Then do it.
Not very likely.
All right. You're wearing a gun. Are you a coward, too, Marshal?
Morgan, come outside. I want to talk to you.
Okay, Marshal.
You're both cowards. That's what you are, cowards.
Why didn't you kill him in there, Marshal? That was your chance.
I'm not a gunman, Morgan. I'm a lawman. Won't you ever understand that?
Maybe I'm beginning to.
Look, Morgan, it's no use. I'm not going to fight Clegg. Now, you can't use the law for your own revenge. That's not what it's for. Now, why don't you forget this and go back home?
Marshal, do you think I'm a coward because I won't put on a gun and let him kill me?
I don't know what to think, Morgan. You seem to be doing all the thinking these days.
My brother Abe was murdered, Marshal. He was murdered.
I'm sorry, Morgan, but there's nothing I can do. Now, good night.
Are you listening to Gunsmoke? In your favorite easy chair? Or out driving? Oh, there you are. In the kitchen. Say, you want to make whatever you're doing more enjoyable? Have a Chesterfield. Enjoy Chesterfield's better taste and mildness. You see, Chesterfield packs more pleasure because it's more perfectly packed. A more perfectly packed cigarette gives you an open, easy draw that unlocks all the better taste and mildness of fine tobaccos. And Chesterfield, made by exclusive Accuray, is more perfectly packed, with an even distribution of tobacco from one end of your Chesterfield to the other. Firm and pleasing to the lips, mild, yet deeply satisfying. Remember, to the touch, to the taste.
Chesterfield packs more pleasure because Chesterfield's more perfectly packed.
Buy Chesterfield. Mild, yet they satisfy the most.
Dillon?
Oh, where is everybody, Chester? Why is the town so quiet this afternoon?
Everybody seen you riding in, I guess.
Huh?
They've been waiting for you to get back.
Waiting for me? Why?
I told them you'd be back early afternoon. There's trouble here this morning, Mr. Dillon.
You mean a shooting?
Yes, sir.
Morgan?
Yes, sir, it was Morgan.
Yeah, so he put on a gun after all, huh?
No, sir, he was unarmed.
What?
He ain't dead, though. At least not yet. He's up at dock.
Where's Clegg?
Clegg must have saw you ride in, too. He's standing across the street now, behind you there.
Well, I won't keep him waiting. I hear you shot another man, Clegg.
He deserved it.
Did he?
I warned him about following me around. It drove me half crazy.
So you stopped him?
He slapped me. No man can take that.
No, not even his brother Abe could.
Say, I plumb forgot about that.
You told me once how smart you are, Clegg. I guess you forgot about that, too.
What do you mean?
Morgan was unarmed.
You gonna try to put me in jail, Marshal?
I'm gonna try.
Now you're forgetting. I also told you I'm too fast for you.
Maybe you are. I'm arresting you, Clegg.
Keep your eyes on mine, Marshal. I want to see the look in them when it hits you. That's the best part. Now?
Thank you.
Matt?
Doc.
I heard the shots, Matt. I see Clegg still lying there.
Not if he's got any friends that can move him.
I doubt if he has. A man like that.
I guess not, Doc.
You did it the only way possible.
I was trying to arrest him, Doc. I didn't walk out there to shoot him down. How's Morgan?
With two bullets in him, he's doing as well as might be expected.
Well, meaning what?
He's dying, Matt.
Yeah. Now, let's go see him.
Matter of fact, there's no reason at all he should have lived this long. I can't understand it. Most men would have died on the spot, shot up the way he was.
Morgan?
Marshal, I heard some shooting, didn't I?
Yeah. Yeah, you did.
Was you in it?
I was.
And Clegg's dead, huh?
That's how you wanted it, wasn't it?
That's how I wanted it. It's what I've been hanging on for.
Morgan, you knew he'd shoot you when you slapped him, didn't you?
I had him on edge, Marshal. I planned it that way.
Yeah, I thought so. And you were willing to die just to get me to face him, huh?
There wasn't no other way. I couldn't kill him myself.
Well, I can't say I admire your thinking, but you're sure not a coward.
He murdered my brother. He murdered me the same way. But we got him anyway. Didn't we? Didn't we, Mother?
Well, he was right. He won. Even if he had to die to do it.
Yeah. But you know something, Doc? I feel like a hangman. You made an executioner out of me. And I don't like it.
I understand that, Matt. But you'll forget it. You'll forget it. In time.
Yeah, sure. One more thing to forget.
Moment, our star, William Conrad.
Chesterfield packs more pleasure because Chesterfield's more perfectly packed.
A cigarette made better and packed better smokes better, tastes better. And Chesterfield is more perfectly packed by Accuray. This electronic miracle removes human error in cigarette manufacture. So Accuray Chesterfield is firm and pleasing to the lips. Chesterfield. Mild, yet they satisfy the most.
On the frontier, bands of marauding Indians weren't too uncommon. And next week, during an attack, three people are killed. But not by the Indians. And that was the West. Good night.
Gunsmoke, produced and directed by Norman McDonald, stars William Conrad as Matt Dillon, U.S. Marshal. Our story was specially written for Gunsmoke by John Meston, with music composed and conducted by Rex Corey. Sound patterns by Ray Kemper and Bill James. Featured in the cast were Sam Edwards, Vic Perrin, and John Daner. Harley Bear is Chester, Howard McNear is Doc, and Georgia Ellis is Kitty. Take a turn.
Well, That was episode, I think, 210 of Gunsmoke, the Executioner, with an original air date of the 15th of April, 1956. Actually, today's, everything I played today is pretty star-studded, with Raymond Burr and yours truly, Johnny Dollar, John Daner, in that episode of Gunsmoke. My name is Arthur, and you have been listening to The Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org, Medford Tufts Freeform Radio. I'll be back next week to play some more radio for you. Thanks.
We are Jetpacks for Sale.
And you're listening to Freeform Radio, 91.5 FM, WMFO, Medford, Mass.